Thanks for joining me again on The Gladies, the podcast about feminist issues during life between girl and lady. Recently, I started testing out a new style with this podcast, cutting together what I felt like became audio articles. I'm going to continue with these, which is why you might have noticed that the podcast is switching from two people to just me. But today, I'm going to go back to that interview style, because I had someone really cool join me, Emma May, the face behind Betty Grumble. Now, Betty Grumble is an artist, a surreal showgirl, a feminist clown, and most importantly, she's an eco-sexual feminist, which you're going to hear explained a little later on in our interview. I first came across Betty Grumble at this debaucherous Christmas party in 2012 where she performed, and she came out in this curly Marie Antoinette style wig, dramatic neon pink and green makeup, and she was wearing a pig nose and a school uniform. And at first everyone assumed she was going to strip, and her art really does play with burlesque, but not in that traditional sense. And so she did it in this way that really challenged the male gaze. She didn't pander to the heteronormative male sexuality and ego, because she incorporated all of these really grimy elements that really challenged the expectations that we have for the female body to be classed as sexy. But personally, one of the most alluring and intriguing things about her is that she, or I guess both Betty Grumble and the woman behind her, Emma May, each have that kind of intangible energy about them that really draws you in. If you want to see her in action, there's actually a short video on the Gladies Facebook page. And on that note of self-promotion, I'm just going to ask you to ever so kindly log on to iTunes and give me a rating and review, because that would make my heart sing in ways that you can't even imagine. And I also wanted to let you know that you can now find the Gladies episodes on Stitcher, which is a podcast streaming app, which I've found some really cool podcasts and different bits and pieces on myself. They theme all sorts of episodes. You can find a whole series on Leonard Dunn if you want, if you feel like fangirling out. And but I'm also on Twitter as well, which I kind of share interesting articles that I find throughout the week. Also, as a quick teaser, in the upcoming podcast, I'm going to be covering the voluntary human extinction movement and the hashtag room to move movement. One is tackling overpopulation, the other is tackling sexual assault in clubbing venues. Both are completely different, but both are completely fascinating. Anyway, I'm going to throw to MMA because I can't express in words my admiration for her. So I'm going to let the woman speak for herself. Thanks, guys. Cool. All right. Well, we'll get stuck into it. So first of all, just for like the audience, can you tell me a bit about yourself and also who Betty Grumble is?
Yes. Well, my name is Emma May Gibson, and I'm a feminist performance artist. I'm interested in asking what is a body and reacting to the kind of, you know, the possibilities that the beautiful world has, but also like the oppressive regimes that are restricting us. And one way that I do that is through an avatar I created called Betty Grumble, who's an obscene beauty queen, surreal showgirl, and a feminist clown, also like a sex clown as well. So I oscillate between those two things. So yeah.
And for people who haven't seen you or Betty Grumble perform, can you kind of explain what the performances look like?
Yeah, well, I would say I am a drag queen. It's very drag. It's quite grotesque. I'm a clown in the truest sense. Like the makeup is very boot-toed and over the top. I have big eyebrows and big eyelashes and fluoro colours. And Betty usually has this really big blonde kind of Antoinette-esque wig on that she wriggles around in. She's very fleshy and overt in her nature. And the performances that I do kind of hijack burlesque and stay true to burlesque in a way, but I guess some people would say it's hijacking it. You know, I do burlesque short works and cabaret works and collaborate with other artists or just occupy space. Walk down the street as Betty is a performance unto itself. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some of the photos you're at. I think it was a little while ago, but the anti-beauty, child beauty pageant protests.
Yeah, that was one of the first things that Betty did, because I invented Betty for a queer talent quest, and which is kind of funny because Toddlers and Tiaras was really big at the time. I thought, well, that's kind of ripe for the, you know, to be done before, but I kind of just made this short act about this grown-up child pageant queen that just loses it when she doesn't win the prize. And then I got to talking with Catherine Manning's woman who started an organization called Pull the Pin because they wanted to bring beauty pageants here. And yeah, I ended up being this kind of mascot for the rally, which is really intense because there's a lot of people that, you know, like wanted the child beauty pageants to happen, and they did happen, but we were kind of just there to talk about the commodification of the children and some of the problems that putting children in child pageants, beauty pageants, stir up.
Yeah. Okay. And so you mentioned Betty Grumble was a child beauty pageant queen.
Yeah, that's kind of her genesis. Like, she is from that world. A lot of the time in my performances, there's this like a bodiless voice. It's like saying, yes, Betty, go more, big eyes, big teeth, yes. And then Betty is overwhelmed by that and rebels against it. So she's within the beauty pageant world, but she believes in true beauty. She's just been given the wrong tools to kind of manifest it with. It's a difficult thing, and I still haven't solved it. You know, it's that thing like, can you wear a lipstick and be a feminist? Like, can you be, how can I like strip myself naked in a nightclub and ride around and still be completely empowered? Like, what are all these you know, oppositions about shame and the body and flesh and sexuality that are all really interesting to play with, but are still in process?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll talk about it later, but I think we really are in this kind of transient period between feminism coming through again and figuring out what people are and aren't comfortable with, and like, yeah, what that revolves around the body and how we all figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's just it. I mean, what I'm learning more and more is I'm on my own journey of a kind of, that's the thing with feminism, people are like, but you hate men, like basic bitches say things like, you hate all men and you can't do this, because like any ideology, it can be radicalized in different ways. And I would argue that the patriarch kind of like, when feminism was, you know, the suffragettes were coming, they kind of said, well, this is what feminism is, and they're all men haters, therefore it's become a dirty word. So it is, you know, words are really useful, but then we can become trapped by their binaries. But I've been discovering, you know, I would say I'm a sex positive, eco-sexual feminist. That's just like the little landscapes I'm traversing. But yeah, everyone just figures it out for themselves. I guess the most important thing is that we're not dictating what people can and can't do with their bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about, you know, what you can and can't do, but then also, again, what society can kind of push you in a direction of going into. So you think it's something that you want to do, but trying to figure out what you really want is a hard thing to kind of direct.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like being tricked into thinking that things are empowering when maybe they're not, when you haven't kind of, when they've been foisted on you instead of you discovering it yourself. Yeah.
Even I guess all this like pro-feminist advertising recently that you see with like running like a, there's, I don't know if you've seen the ad Run Like a Girl.
It's like
a YouTube clip thing, and it's kind of, they're saying that a lot of advertising companies are now using this feminism like empowerment to just like sell products, and the dichotomy between that, you know, is just like a big kind of minefield. But anyway, going back to you, can you kind of tell me where, can you tell me about the role of feminism in your life and yeah, how it plays into your performing?
Yeah, when I was just a little girl, it was dirty word, feminism. Or it was something that I just wasn't educated about. You know, the suffragette movement was something that happened, and now the world was the way it was. And I, you know, the way male dominance was in society was just normal to me. I guess I had some instincts that were like, you know, I was pretty angry about just things that would erupt, and, you know, you just have your own instincts about that, about, you know, rape culture and just the way you get treated as a woman. But it wasn't until university, like second year university, where I just was hanging around the right people and having the right conversations. And we started, because I remember I used to be like, no, I'm not a feminist, I'm a humanist. Which you can kind of argue, you can see how that works. But I remember having an aha moment and thinking, I can't kind of disregard all of these women that have gone before me. And the very danger of the word feminism is why we have to keep on using it. Yeah.
I agree entirely.
So we started this burlesque gang, my friends and I. I'm super daggy. But really, earnest, it was called What Makes Men Blush, and we had infiltrated burlesque spaces, and people really liked us, but we'd do things like we'd have black eyes and blood, like a lot of the things that I still play with, but it was all very, like, just playing with disrupting the male gaze. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that was a turning point for me. I guess I was like second year uni, and then I went in, and then the gang disbanded, and then I just kept going with Betty. Just kept on going.
Has she changed over the years?
Yeah. I used to have all these rules for her about, you know, she was an avatar that I put on, a mask, and that's like a really exciting thing to have this identity that you put on, and kind of people don't really know who you are behind it, because the mask kind of goes, look at me, but don't look at me at the same time. Yeah, she's changed because those rules have collapsed a little bit. You know, I'm more interested in the kind of queerness that happens in performance in between thresholds. So, this, you know, very obvious examples are, like, sometimes in performance I'll remove the wig, you remove the makeup, or due to fluids being thrown, or I can exist in the kind of mid state. And I guess I've just become more articulate in the way that I make performance work. And I've also relaxed into my own identity, which just happens when you get older. Mm. But I've maintained the rage as well, even though that's been something that has, you know, been an unattractive thing to kind of have as one of my mantras, which is love and anger. I really connect with, like, the Valerie Solanas of the world. I don't know if you've heard, like, Scum Manifesto, or the radical feminists of the 1970s who had a rage. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like now that's something that we can tap into. And it's also a rage against not just the patriarch, but also a kind of capitalist world consumer culture that treats women and people as objects, because, you know, men and everybody in between are just as much a victim to the patriarch as women. It's just that we are second, and we are, you know, they happen to have the power, whether they're aware of it or not.
Just quickly going back a little bit, you mentioned some of those rules. Did you have a lot of them, or was it just like you want to?
Yeah, I guess it was just my way. It's like putting on armor. You put on, you know, and I'm sure a lot of male, when I say I think I'm a drag queen, I also am very, that's a very sacred thing for gay men as well. So I'm also very respectful of that. But I, you know, I'm accepted into that world as well, because I think gay men can understand women's womanhood in a way, because they've also been, like, put down, like, you know, you're less than us because you're a faggot. So in reaction to that, drag queens go, you think I'm a woman, you think that, you know, well, I'll make myself the most grandiose, beautiful thing, you won't be able to look away. So that's what I felt like I was doing with Betty, because I had a lot of anger about my hypervisibility as a young woman, about how men felt they were entitled to enter into my space. And I saw that happening to other women. So it's a gender fuckery, like, putting on. It's like this, one of my university lecturers once told me that it was really phallic, but, like, I made my head into this, like war mask. I'm like, yeah, kind of. But yeah, the rules I had were I used to like always have to have these fake teeth in that I wore. Like I always had to have the wig on. I always had to speak in a certain way and move in a certain way, which all still happens, but it's not as – I'm not as kind of rigid about it. I'd like to think that Betty's evolved. Also, my makeup was very, very bad when I first started doing it. Like it just wasn't it – was, it's cute because it, you can kind of see the evolution of it, but – I think that I've only just arrived at Betty's real, like, actual face in, like, the past year.
Yeah, where did the face painting and everything come from? Like, what made you want to take that up? Is that because you wanted to physically cover your face and mask who you were?
I guess I was just – I just wanted to play with the hyper-real and the surreal, and, you know, the idea of being a rainbow warrior, magic. And then that just, it needs to be more. And then I used to use just makeup and now I use actual face paint. So it's more of like a graphic covering.
So I remember first seeing you, in 2012 at a Christmas staff party for the World Bar.
I remember that.
And I remember just being fascinated by the performance and like the way you incorporated nudity into your act, but at the same time, like really challenged the stereotypical way that the female body is sexualized. And you were like intoxicatingly sexy, but at the same time you were like shocking the audience with these grimy elements. I think you had like chocolate between your ass at some point and you're like gyrating, and as like your character got more drunk and you came out in this sexy schoolgirl costume and everyone's like, oh, this is going to be like some kind of sexy strip thing. And then you really challenged everyone's notion around that, which was really, really cool. And everyone really liked it. And it always stayed with me. But I wanted to ask about that role of nudity in your performance and what statement you're making with it, Neil, why you started incorporating nudity into your performances.
Yeah. Well, it's just because I started doing gigs in the burlesque world, and then burlesque has expectations and tropes, and I was really interested in the reveal, because it's burlesque is meant to be like, and people like do really innovative and amazing things around how they take their clothes off or what gimmick they've got. So I was interested in Betty. I do reveal my naked self, but often the actual reveal is something like her body spilling out of itself or something happening to her body. Like it might be a big glitter vomit, or like you saw a poo. I do a showgirl poo, or Betty in one act wraps herself in cling wrap so her naked body is there, but then the act continues on for another 7 minutes and she becomes this other cocoon being. So probably because I'm an exhibitionist as well, that was something that I naturally went into exploring, because I felt like you see a lot of the woman body presented in a particular way and it's contained and that is up and it's for, you know, a male gaze. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, all like a really rigid way of being. So I, with mischief and with love, wanted to irritate that by playing with how I might move my body. And I know that I have a kind of normative body, like I have breasts and legs that I can wriggle and move. So people have... It can make people really uncomfortable seeing a woman body spill out of itself or her flesh move in a way that isn't for the pleasure of kind of this hetero matrix. So makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's what's most interesting about it. Like, yeah, the changing of those expectations.
But it can also be, and that's something that Betty's allowed me to do as well, is discover like my own sensuality. Like there are moments of just arriving and being like that. I feel like my performance aren't just like grotesque. They can be sensual as well, in, you know, in my humor or in my ability, my dance ability, or the story I'm telling.
Yeah, and I guess also very intimate. I mean, I know in some performances, I mean, I guess there's the film clip that you've got on your website where, you know, she's kind of, you're like really sensual and sexy and gorgeous, and then at the end the makeup really starts coming off and you can see her, I mean, correct me if I'm reading this wrong, but trying to keep up appearances, but it's starting to melt away.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested in the melt, in the decay, because it happens to all of us. I'm interested in deconstructing things because then you can kind of make new things out of it. There's that fertile ground for something new. And I think that's what, you know, that's what queer performance does and what feminist activism tries to do too.
Yeah. Actually brings us onto a good topic that I wanted to discuss, which is the Free the Nipple movement. Yep. You've kind of been like following recently, and I guess looking back into it, it's kind of been going a little bit since like 2012, I guess, like kind of bubbling on, but then really kind of catching momentum mid last year, and then again really recently this year with I think it's her name, Scott Willis.
It's because it's legal in New York.
Yeah, it's legal in New York to walk around topless as a female. There's only 3 states in America that you can't walk around topless. But I think where this debate has started up again is around social media and the censorship around social media and the sexualized female bodies that don't show the nipple as okay to be on there. But as soon as you show a nipple, then, and it's a female's nipple, it's seen as negative and taken down.
Yeah, or armpit hair or menstrual blood. It's just if the body isn't being presented in a way that's palatable for the kind of consumer patriarch, then yeah, that's a no-go zone. I suppose it's just about people putting things into boxes, like the nipple's covered, cool, it's a sexy photo. It's uncovered, it's pornography, and that's to go over there because we don't want to, you know, disrupt all the boxes and categories we put things in.
Yeah.
And it's like I cop it all the time. It's like, are you a man or a woman? Are you a man or a woman? In Betty. Because it's, you know, might be ambiguous to some people, but people are quite obsessed with knowing what things are and putting them in places. So I don't know, maybe it's just the big corporate machine at work again, censoring things.
So you find that you have people wanting to define whether, yeah, you're male or female and...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what Betty does. She's, you know, she disrupts things, but it can get really frustrating. And, you know, I've had young men come up to me and like, look, I find you really hot, but I just need to know whether you're a man or a woman. I'm like, does it matter? And or I went, or do you know what you are? Like, all of these things are fluid. People are very, yeah, it's quite sad when you think about it because it really reflects how, like, tight their worldview is on the possibility of things. But yeah, that's a question I get all the time. But in relation to the nipple, I wish I had it with me, but I think it's still downstairs at Tokyo. I was told by a venue that I'd performed at once, and then they asked me back, but they're like, oh, but you caused an uproar last time and you can't legally be naked here. So you have to, it's really bizarre, like, because, you know, burlesque, like, all you have to do is cover up just the nipples, which I find more salacious than just a bare chest. You cover up, I just put like a bit of gaff along my vagina. You just cover up that. But then I took photos of my breasts and my vagina and stuck them on my head and just and sang a song to the audience. So that was just, and you can get away with it because it's not a live naked body, but it's still a naked body. Yeah, it's quite a flawed system.
That's really bizarre. Yeah, it's like once you put a screen between it, it makes people a little more comfortable
it
about it in a way.
From it.
That's exactly it, yeah.
It removes them from it. I mean, which is interesting that people are so affected by just images on a screen. So, you know, that it has such people. But who is it that, who is censoring the nipple? Is it Instagram? Is it, you know, the corporate sponsors of those? It's not the people of Instagram, although people report it, but who has a final say and who can kind of transform that?
I mean, when you look at the menstruation movement or the Instagram movement recently, I guess that would have, I know what happens is they get, if someone reports it, it gets taken down straight away and then it goes to a warehouse full of people whose jobs it is to kind of go through that content and decipher whether it is, whether it goes with their guidelines about
community standards.
Yeah, totally. And I guess, I mean, I would speculate that usually period blood would have been offensive to the standard Instagram viewer, and then but seeing the uproar online, they had to kind of backtrack and be like, actually, no, it's fine. It was just like a glitch. Don't worry about it. But that, I mean, that's my perspective, really.
Yeah.
That's my conspiracy theory. But at the same time, I read an article that said, you know, what about if you had started having, like, first of all, I think it's really important that we start seeing menstrual blood more often. I think periods do need to be normalized. I think the fact that there are still guys who don't have sex with their girlfriends when they're on the period is fucked. But at the same time, if you see, like...
Where do they think that they come from?
I know, right? What I was going to say is that if we started seeing, like, semen on Instagram and, like, shit and everything, is then, like... Because they're all bodily fluids, so...
Yeah. I wonder how I would... It depends on the context.
Mm, yeah.
Wow. I'm sure that exists out there.
Probably. I'm sure the poor souls that have to go through all the offensive content have seen it all before, and like, yeah, copious images of it. But I almost feel like now we're going through a bit of a moment where with the Free the Nipple campaign, and have you heard of Femin?
Yeah.
That the female nude body is almost becoming a bit of a sign of rebellion, like, because it's been so sexualized, women are using it to be like, fuck you, I'm going to show you what it's like when it's not sexualized. Are you going to have to take it?
But it's simultaneously rebellious and celebratory, because you know that people in the space are either going to be like with you, much like these women who go and protest and topless and what, they know that people are either, it's very instant reaction and diversive like that, like it all. I totally use my body as rebel. It's a reclamation of my body, my flesh. Mm-hmm. I don't have to like move in a particular way. It can be my own expressive self. And it's also exciting. It can be really melancholic. It depends on the context. But it's funny because there's a lot of places that you can't be naked. And it's interesting that it's still such a taboo thing. It's like we all get naked every day. It's like... It's really wacky how society's made us quite paralyzed about our own bodies. Not that I think everybody should have to display themselves, but just that, you know, men can, you know, I even when I go to the beach want to have like no top on, but you still get a bit, you know, am I going to offend anybody? Am I going to be told to cover up because my body makes somebody else? It's that Madonna Hall weird thing again. I do think that, you know, depending on the context, is a rebellious act for a woman to be naked in space, not for the pleasure of men.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely.
But she can also do it for the pleasure of men.
Yeah.
She gets to.
Yeah, and she'll be able to whenever she likes.
It's just the ratio's out. You know, have you seen that movie They Live?
No, what's They Live?
It's like a really bad, it's like 80s movie, and oh, it's just a really great, in its dagginess, just exploration of how we're all brainwashed. But this guy finds his goggles and he puts them on, and then he can see that all the advertising is like telling people to obey and like consume and do everything in particular ways, and then he can see like some people are humans but some people are aliens. And I'm like, I may be paranoid, but some people are maybe aliens. Just like, I don't know, like our prime minister who said that women are physiologically, psychologically, like, unable to do the same work that men can do. Like, surely it's got to be a joke. He's going to take off the mask and reveal the little alien that's, like, working him.
Yeah, he's an alien from the 50s.
I mean, these are the same people that, you know, get things censored. It's conservative.
Mm.
Regulating bodies, maintain the tyranny of the familiar. You know, anything that's different, just shut it down.
Yeah, I wonder if like all these conservative views, if they're always going to be around, or now that we're kind of now that more and more, I mean, I know it's like a really slow process, but more countries are coming around to same-sex marriage and relationships are becoming more fluid and sexuality is becoming more fluid. And even like when you get to, you know, now people mash up each other's content. I wonder if we're like slowly moving away, if those traditional views will always be around, or we're starting to kind of like get away from them.
Yeah, I have hope. I think, I mean, look how far women have come. Like, we used to be the property of men, or I'd be killed for wearing theirs or showing my arms. And people are still in the world. Women are still being treated like that. I know that, very aware of that, very aware of my own luck and privilege for being in this particular space. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't still, like, speak towards a better future for everybody. But I don't know, will these, yeah, maybe people and their conservatism will come around, but I do think our visibility is getting better. At least I would hope so. We're making progress. Or at least that there's some kind of galvanizing mechanism at play where, you know, like these social media phenomenons are doing good. My concern is that we maybe perhaps we'll get tricked into thinking that we are all really empowered and with it when we're not actually addressing like vital things, like actual like human rights issues on the ground about, you know, these vulnerable bodies, woman bodies aligned with the earth body that we're annihilating. It's like surface kind of activism that can happen, but and it's total conspiracy theories. All of these other things are at play. Like, how do we penetrate, you know, the Tony Abbotts of the world, the conservatives that are like running, that are, you know, closing down Aboriginal communities? Like, when people are gathering in the streets, and we are, but there's kind of a distance that social media can take us. I'm not sure how we make the leap. You know, there's an amazing scene in V for Vendetta where everybody comes out the street and stops the oppressors. Right? Will we ever? Is that what needs to happen to make actual change happen, or do we all make changes in our micro worlds? And is that actually happening? Like, I've had women come up to me and go, "Oh, you know, thank you for the story you just told on stage, and that's given me permission to feel like this." Like that kind of connectedness, I really believe in. It's easy to get really cynical about activism, like online activism, but I guess it's maybe a marriage of both.
You mentioned before being, like an eco-sexual feminist. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, well, I discovered this terminology from one of my amazing people that I look up to, Annie Sprinkle. Mm-hmm. Annie Sprinkle.
Yeah, the porn star.
Yeah.
Slash artist, slash porn everything. Artist, yeah, yeah.
Slash everything, goddess. She is an ecosexual, and she does this artwork where her and her partner like marry the mountains and marry the ocean. And like her feminism has evolved in a way where she, you know, is returning to nature. And I'm really interested and totally bond with that. I make myself so, it almost synthetic in a way, in all the way I apply myself to make myself fantastical. I really relate to the tragedy of, you know, the annihilation of the earth or the consumption of the earth and the way that people consume women's bodies as well. I think the two are really linked. We're raping the planet and women, you know, being annihilated as well, which, yeah, I'm still working on how I can connect those in performance or in writing, in exploring. I guess that's where my kind of interest is, in how I might start a dialogue that is about both an eco-feminism that is about an eco-feminism.
Such a cool term, and I can't believe I hadn't heard of it before.
Ecosexuals, yeah. She's got a really great website. I think there's a documentary called The Ecosexuals Are Coming. It's, you know, it's disruptive to talk about the planet. People, you know, especially the corporate world, well, they kind of, you know, it's carbon offset. We should be one of the world leaders, and we're not. It's like a cartoon, like the villains in a cartoon having all of these really problematic belief systems about women, about asylum seekers, about refugees, about vulnerable bodies. You know, there's Charlie Chaplin did a film called The Dictator, The Great Dictator, mm-hmm. and there's a speech he does at the end of it that's always resonated with me. And he made the film while the Second World War was still happening. And he was like buffooning as an Adolf Hitler character, and he stood up and he did this amazing speech at the end of it that was kind of about what I'm speaking about like it doesn't have to be like this. But there's, for me and my own feminism, I want to connect it. I want it to intersect, you know. I want to have an intersecting feminism that connects to, you know, issues of your ethnicity and class and the environment. That, you know, that's something you can get criticized on a lot. There's a lot of infighting that can happen. I just want to be open. That makes sense.
Yeah,
as much
yeah.
as my own ideas about how I interact with the world.
Recently, I've been working on another podcast about the voluntary human extinction movement, and it just reminds me of what you were saying about, like, being pro-environment is quite a radical thing, which is still, it's bizarre that it is, you know, when we're so far into environmental degradation. Mm. But these people, when you say that name, it's attention grabbing, it's extreme. And I guess technically it is an extremist view, the thought that you want the human population to become extinct. But their perspective is that, well, we're in an extreme place or period in history and state of the environment, these two leeways about where things could go.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they're also like, we're not telling everyone to go and kill themselves right now. We're saying you don't necessarily have to have more children, and maybe look at a society's need to have children. Is it just to, like, validate our own purpose? And
yeah.
What kind of world are you bringing these children into? And then there are also so many millions of other children who are already disadvantaged and needing help.
Some people make a choice. Some people don't. Whether to be conscious or unconscious, you can live your life and go, like, it's just my life. Oh, don't worry. And chuck that bit of rubbish out the window. Have six kids. Don't worry about it. Just some... Or you think about your impact on a kind of on a greater level, maybe. And I think people make that choice. Some people don't because of their situation. But we've gone into environmentalism. But these are basic human. And then still, it astounds me because if you look at the 70s, 80s, and the 90s, especially in performance art, it's almost like, maybe we've been moving in a different way, but it's like we step back. And like, it's still a huge counterculture to call yourself a feminist or environmentalist or like a daggy to be an angry woman. You know, 30 women are already dead in this country, killed by people they know. It's like, why aren't we talking about what's happening in, like, apparently in a, you know, a Western country?
Yeah, we say we have equality.
Yeah.
What about ecofeminism specifically? Also, does that relate to Mother Earth and our relationship to, and like it kind of feeding us and us feeding it and so on?
It's a gender fluid Earth. It's a mother Earth. I think I connect it to that idea that we should be living harmoniously with each other and in respect with each other. But I see the earth body as being mined and taken from and violated, and I see women's bodies. Like, people think they're entitled to the planet. People think they're entitled to women's bodies because we're just disposable and then eventually invisible when we age.
That's a really interesting point. I went to All About Women recently, a festival at Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
And Germaine Greer was making the point, while we're now finally identifying that we need to help women of colour and disabled women and women of different communities, we're still, feminism is in a way being quite ageist because we're not also lifting up elderly women who are completely ignored and just become an invisible person and are to a complete disadvantage. And so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, she's great. She'd watch everyone. She kind of like survey the discussion. Everyone's putting their two cents in and then she's just like, bam, here's what I think.
Yeah.
It just takes everyone to left field.
Yeah. But she's right. Because, and that was part of making Betty for me. Like, I felt like I was highly visible. I feel like I am. It's going to change in like 10 years. You know, men would come up to me on the street and grab my breath.
Really?
Or, you know, let alone just being curb crawls that had happened, or like that kind of like violence that happens. It happens. Visible. And it's like what I was saying about drag queens. Like, I'm that visible. I'm going to make myself so visible you're not going to be able to look away. But my own mother's had conversations with me. She's like, I go into shops now and people don't acknowledge me because I'm a certain age and women become invisible. But men still have power until they become really elderly, you know, if they're wearing a suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting point. As an actress and a dancer, you're, you know, often taking on these different identities. And in some of Betty's acts, like, the makeup begins to slip. Can you talk to a little bit about the different identities that we have to take up? I mean, Betty is often, I mean, at least building on her former role as a child beauty pageant, you know, she was performing her own identity, this beautiful identity.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, that's a kind of joke of it. It's like, so beautiful, but she's really quite, she might be like hideous to some people, but she's kind of like the back of a caterpillar's bum when they have faces on their ass to like scare birds. It's like, I'm so beautiful. I'm so like, it's a grotesque body. It's a monstrous woman body. But I think that you transcend to real beauty through that kind of monstrousness. And Betty's commentary on that kind of hyper-femininity isn't to disregard it as not being a powerful thing. It's just that you don't have to be a particular way to exist. But unfortunately, you know, there is still that normative idea of what beauty is, but, you know, dictated to us by the beauty industry. I really believe that satire is a really powerful way to unmask the villains of this world, and I believe that live performance brings people together like that, you know, whether they end up walking out or end up loving it. There's a long history of like gathering in spaces and, you know, discussing the world's problems by laughing at them.
Yeah, and I guess it's making people look at things in a different way and having things demonstrated in a different way to just like reading a news article about inequality or something.
Yeah, I think of Betty as a Trojan horse. Like, she's like this thing that appears and she's got all of these murmurings and this rising shout within her, and it spills out over the course of performance. But it's a balance. It's a collision and a balance of comedy and horror. Like I said before, my mantra is love and anger, and I'm not going to shy away. I'm going on about this because I heard some gossip that somebody was like, oh, that Betty Grummel, she's, you know, like that my anger wasn't valid, or that it was just an unfashionable thing to be an angry lady. I'm like, why aren't people more angry? Like, the anger that I'm talking about, you know, I'm not going to throw a brick through somebody's front window. It's like, it should be an activating anger, like a gathering anger that we get together and do, because people, you know, when it's not an ideal way to live. I shouldn't be scared to walk down the street alone. I shouldn't, you know, have to be followed by dudes in a car, or I shouldn't have to mourn for women who've been like murdered overseas because of being a woman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I want to, you know, maintain the rage. It's an old feminist slogan, maintain the rage, love and anger. That's Betty's mantra for the moment anyway, you know. Maybe the world's going to heal itself and I can just climb trees in the Amazon.
Yeah, I think that negativity around an angry woman, though, just the same as what we saw with the suffragettes and in the 70s, and even the fact that feminism is still like a dirty word.
Yeah.
People are afraid of women being motivated and be like, no, this is fucked, I'm going to take a stand against it.
Yeah. Basically, it's like being told to calm down, like, calm down, darling. Calm down. You're like, there's just, yeah, that's learnt behavior about shutting women down, because we do have an innate power, you know. And it's like, your feminism is about equality. That is what everyone should know about feminism. But it's also about celebrating everybody's differences. Like, that's what I'm interested in cultivating. And queer culture does that as well.
when it's on your mind. There's no light in your eyes. Just quit pretending. You'll have a vice that will hide every trial. Oh, you'll be caught, take it in.